What's up, guys? My name is Leighton Boer. I'm your host of the podcast called Leighton Minutes. I'm super excited to bring you a podcast in 10 minutes or less, because in this crazy world, sometimes that is all we got. In those 10 minutes, we are going to get after our overall health, nutrition, and mindset, provide you amazing content in order to transcend you to a brand new level physically, mentally, and emotionally. With that being said, sit back, relax, enjoy yourself some Leighton Minutes. In the meantime, keep moving, stay uncommon, and be scrappy. Thanks so much for joining us, guys. Another episode of Leighton Minutes. Today, we're going to have an extended version as we are going to give you a live feed of our webinar we had and hosted at the gym in regards to pelvic floor. So we make this uncomfortable conversation more approachable and provide you education and content by utilizing an amazing physiotherapist from Toronto, Canada, Vanessa Dugan. She specializes in women one-to-one, talks about prevention, education in terms of your prevention, what's normal, what's not normal, modifications with exercises, things you can do at home, whether it's picking up kids, running at home, and just provides you an amazing background on core, pelvic floor, what's incontinence, and much, much more. So hope you guys enjoy.
Whether they're too tight or whether they're not strong enough or whether they're just not performing the way you need them to. So when people talk about Kegels, they're talking about a pelvic floor contraction. So when we look at our pelvic floor, actually this way is a little bit easier. I don't know if you can all see, but it's a horseshoe structure. So essentially the horseshoe loop is closer to the back versus the two openings are more to the front here. So if you're looking at this, this is somebody's spine, right? So it's like their belly's right in front of you. And now you're looking deep into their pelvis. So the horseshoe is like this of muscles, okay? The way that the muscles act through a pelvic floor contraction, or how some people call it Kegel, is by squeezing and pulling forward. So what they're doing is by squeezing together and pulling forward, they're closing all the openings. So the urethra where you pee from, the vaginal opening, and your rectum or your anus, to squeeze all those from involuntary letting out. And to talk about each one individually, let's talk about the bladder and the rectum. Each one has an involuntary sphincter, so something that we can't voluntarily control. We can't control our heart beating. We can't control our lungs really expanding and deflating to an extent. They're under involuntary control. The same thing for your bladder and your bowel system. There is an involuntary sphincter that we can't control. It closes and opens on its own through a reflex system. The pelvic floor is our voluntary sphincter control. That's the part that we can stop ourselves. So if we talk about the bladder starts to fill up like a balloon. So at a certain point, that bladder filling tells your brain that it needs to start to release. It's in danger of exploding, let's say. So the bladder starts to fill, tells the brain to start to empty, in which case the bladder goes, okay, let's start to open up the involuntary sphincter and start to squeeze your bladder down. That is the sensation of saying, I have to go pee, but you have your pelvic floor, the voluntary sphincter, to stop yourself from going until you actually reach the bathroom. So having any type of incontinence comes about when that involuntary sphincter isn't working as well. Okay, so that is the pelvic floor in a very defined nutshell when it comes to bladder control, the bowel, and a little bit of the vaginal tone or vaginal tone. And about Kegels and pelvic floor contractions. Is there any questions here before I keep going on? No. Okay. So one of the questions that we had talked about was that Leighton had mentioned was like, how do I do Kegels properly? And that is, if I were to give you the scientific version, we'll talk about that first and then break it down. A correct pelvic floor contraction or a Kegel is where that horseshoe muscle is able to squeeze in, squeeze up, and squeeze into your abdomen all together. That is a proper pelvic floor contraction. And that's the question a lot of people saying, I don't know if I'm doing it correctly. And to tell you the truth, a lot of times when I go in and assess that person, they are not. Usually when you know that you're doing a pelvic floor contraction great, you have a handle of it. You can tell that you're doing it right. You can feel that contraction, you know you've got it right. The times that you doubt yourself where you're going, I'm not sure what I'm feeling. Is it pulling up? I'm not sure if it's pulling up enough. Those are the times that I feel a little bit more concerned that there actually is something going on, that maybe your Kegel isn't performing correctly. there are times when people feel off and they're actually doing the opposite of what a Kegel should do. So it's actually pushing down when it should be pushing in towards the body. So they'll still feel kind of this pressure sensation, but it's in the opposite direction than what it should be. So that is also something that we want to correct. Kegels are not everything when it comes to exercises for the pelvic floor. It's often what everyone will recommend, but it is not everything that I give to clients, and it's just a very, very small portion of what it comes down to when it comes to rehabilitating the pelvic floor and the core in general. So when you're doing a pelvic floor contraction, the other thing I always like to remind people is if someone is looking at you, they shouldn't even be able to tell that you're trying to do a pelvic floor contraction. So some signs that you're relying on other muscles could be bum clenching. So looking, if you're lying down, it looks like your seat's kind of rising up off the ground, your legs wiggling, your legs shaking as if you're trying to cross your legs. Those are, or even tensing your stomach muscles. All those larger muscles are trying to do the job of the pelvic floor muscles and not being very effective because that's not what they're meant to do. Those are all signs that your body is trying to use these bigger muscles to do the job because your pelvic floor muscles are just not doing the job anymore. So it's one of the signs you can tell if you're not really that strong in your pelvic floor contraction or your Kegels. The pelvic floor is a very important part of the core system. This is what I teach the majority of women that I talk to in all the speeches that I've ever given is we talk about the core as an entire unit. Pelvic floor is one piece of it. If you're having issues with your pelvic floor and you're not addressing every single part of the core, then chances are you're going to have a problem because it all works very intimately together. And when I talk about the core, most of the time people think it's the abs. So things like sit-ups, crunches, planks, those are all going to do things that are for the core. But when we actually talk about the core when it comes to pelvic floor health and the inner core, the canister that I talk about, we're not talking about those big muscles. We're talking about the small stabilizer muscles that are going to support you through any type of movement that you have. So in this case, I'll tell you what it is. And I always like to talk about the core as a pop can or a soda pop can. I don't know. It's different. Canada, the States, I don't know why. But anyway, it's a can. And what you want to think about is if you look at a can, it's got a top and a bottom, and it's rounded. The bottom of your can is your pelvic floor. The top of your can is your diaphragm, or what helps you breathe in and out, so right underneath your chest. And then all around are the inner abdominal muscles, often most used as TA or TVA, transversus abdominis. That's an inner core muscle. And on the back are the inner stabilizer muscles of the back, most often referred to as the multifidi. Those are the muscles that we want to work on when we talk about core strength. We don't care about the bigger muscles. The bigger muscles are fantastic. We use all these smaller stabilizer muscles to support you as you start to move towards other things like planks, like crunches, like any other weightlifting, jumping movement. You still want to have these nice, strong stabilizer muscles to support you as you get stronger through those movements. The core, much like the pelvic floor, is a very unique structure in the sense that this is the only part of our body where we don't have bones to support us. If you look at a skeleton, it's just a big gigantic rib cage with a big hole in the middle with a spine and a big gigantic pelvis at the bottom. There's a lot of gapping in the middle when it comes to supportive structure. And we need that because in our middle, we need to twist and bend, which again, we need that adaptability to move around, but we need the rigidness to support us when we go to bend down to grab our kids or our grandkids, when it goes to picking something off the floor, when it goes to standing up and stretching up to grab something off a higher shelf. We need a strong, stable core to support us as we do those movements. When we don't have a strong, stable core, we end up with problems like low back pain. We end up with disc issues. We end up with pelvic floor problems. We end up with prolapses. We end up with abdominal separation. All those things are intertwined in terms of dealing with any type of core dysfunction. Do I have everyone still on board? Just nod yes if you're okay. Okay, good. We're still on board. Okay, one of the things that I always like to talk about is Kegels, because that is the first thing that everyone tends to go to right away is sort of saying, okay, I'm not really sure what's going on with my pelvic floor. It feels really weak. I'm just going to go straight to Kegels. And my first answer is always is to say, how do you know if you're doing them correctly? How do you know if you're actually squeezing together, lifting up, and lifting in. Because those are all important parts of the Kegel that you need to have a good handle on in order to actually get better. So if you only are able to squeeze together, but you're not doing the other parts about pushing forward and lifting in, then you're not going to get stronger. You're still not going to support the structures as well if you don't have all those three movements of a Kegel. That's number one. The only way that you'll know is, one, by seeing a physical therapist. Two, I do teach people how to do a self-assessment and how to understand how that feels. It's not for everybody. I mean, it is getting very intimate with yourself and understanding how your own muscles feel and how it should feel and what kind of pressures you're feeling. But it's absolutely something for you to become aware of because it's a part of your body just like anything else. So why Kegels aren't everything? People can experience leaking, they can experience pain, and there's one of two reasons why that can happen. One, the most common thought of reason is those muscles aren't strong enough. So if we think of the pelvic floor like the cement ground and there's a hose over top, and you ask, and I'm asking you to stop the hose, you just step on the hose on a cement floor and it's cut off. If you now put that same hose on a trampoline and you go to step on that hose, it's not going to cut off. That's one of the analogies in terms of describing how you can have leakage or how you can pee your pants with a weak pelvic floor. It's not, those muscles just aren't closing everything when they need to. They're just not strong enough. It's just like if I were to ask you to, here's 100 pounds for you to squat when you've only ever squatted 25, you're not going to be able to go bring that weight down and bring it back up. Your muscles just aren't strong enough for that weight. In this case, your pelvic floor isn't strong enough for the day-to-day activities of even just stopping yourself from going pee. The very flip side, which is often what people don't understand, is that your pelvic floor muscles can actually be too tight to stop yourself from going pee. And people often mistake the fact that they think too tight means it's strong, when actually too tight is another sign of muscle weakness. The muscle never relaxes. It's a weak, weak muscle. So the way I describe this one is often if you think about the bicep, which is this heart. So if you think about the bicep, full range of motion of your elbow, that's a nice, straight, flexible, adaptable bicep muscle. If that's a really tight muscle and it only lets your bicep come out or your arm come out this far, and now you're trying to contract that muscle and squeeze it as hard as you can, the power of this movement is much less than the power of this movement. Okay? Even trying it yourself, it's so much stronger to do this than it is to do these little squeezes, okay? So over time, your pelvic floor muscles just, they're so tight that there's not enough energy or strength left to, again, close off that urethra or where you pee from. So that is considered another type of urinary incontinence. So I never give people Kegels to do unless I am 100% sure that it's a weak pelvic floor and not an overly tight pelvic floor. Because when you tell someone with a very tight pelvic floor to just do Kegels, they're doing the very opposite of what they should be doing. All they're doing is training themselves to do this when this isn't what they need to do. They actually need to learn how to stretch their muscles and tighten at the same time. Any questions about that? Because I know that also came up in terms of how possibility to have an overactive pelvic floor. Any questions there? We're good. Okay. It's a very interesting discussion to have because a lot of people don't even realize that they've developed an overactive pelvic floor. What I often see is one precipitates the next, or they've had to use the bathroom a lot of times, and then you've developed this ability to go to the washroom so many times, and then it just kind of precipitates itself. Okay? All right. What else do I want to talk about? Peeing can happen without having kids as well. So it's often misconstrued that only moms or people who have had children have this problem. The other misconception is that only women who have vaginal births have this problem, which is, again, it doesn't protect you from having pelvic floor problems if you have a C-section. You're equally able to have pelvic floor dysfunction even without birthing a child vaginally. So for those women who've never had children, it's quite possible to still suffer from pelvic floor dysfunction. And the reason for that is just like the reason that you can have injuries anywhere else without anything precipitating it. So oftentimes, like in the middle of winter, you'll find people are freezing cold and they just keep their shoulders like right up to their ears because they're so cold and they're so tense. And so they often get headaches, they get all this tension around their shoulders, and they just carry this tension there. Often what I see is my clients or my patients have the same problem in their pelvic floor. They just carry their tension there. Most commonly, for whatever reason, I see this in teachers and nurses. And often it's because it's the nature of their job. It's stressful, and it's the fact that you have to hold on to stop yourself from peeing for so long because you cannot leave the classroom for certain amounts of time. So as long as this is an occupational hazard, by not letting yourself go pee and when you actually have to go pee. Okay. So what I did want to talk to you about is also letting you know that there's lots of things that you can do to develop a healthy pelvic floor. And one of my favorite tips to give is, let's see it over here, is how to actually poop properly. Has everybody heard of the squatty potty? Raise your hand.
I have one.
Nope. You have one?
Yeah.
Good for you. You have a healthy pelvic floor. They're really good. They're supposed to. It's so cheesy to have them. I mean, you could just use a stack of books or any regular stool. The reason for the squatty potty and the popularity around it, it's the way that your rectum has this natural curvature as it comes down. Like that. So when you're actually trying to go to the washroom, your poop can have to, has to navigate some curvature. But when you actually bring your knees higher than the level of your hips, you're tilting your pelvis back and we make more of a straight shoot down. So the problem with having the curvature and doing a lot of these breathing that forces us to pass stool in a more forceful way is that we're forcing stool into these pockets and you actually can develop these like little divots, which makes it even harder for poop to come out. So that leads to constipation issues and a whole lot of other problems in the digestive system, when really if we just change the angle that we go to the washroom at, then it's a lot easier to have a nice straight shoot. You can practice deep breathing instead of actually trying to hold your breath and bear down to pass stool properly. That is the one thing that I pretty much tell 100% of my clients, because it is universal. Everybody can do it. I don't think I found any single person who this would do harm to. It does a benefit to everybody. So if you can change one thing and get one thing from this presentation, it's just change the way you poop. Change how you sit on the toilet, more of a squatting position, and change that you're actually practicing deep breathing. So belly breathing, having your belly really come out and come back in. And that helps you to actually, in a weird way, massage your bowels to actually pass stool down versus just trying to force your breath and push that stool down when that's not a natural way for you to do it. Okay, the other one is caffeine intake and having more water. So often people who have leaking issues will restrict their water intake, and that is the very opposite of what you want to do. The reason being is that having enough water in your bladder actually dilutes the acidity, so it makes it less irritable to the acidity inside. So if you're not having that much water, what's actually inside your bladder is more acidic and more irritating to your bladder, which makes your bladder actually contract more, which makes you feel like you have to pee more, which makes you make more trips to the washroom, which makes a whole other cycle of issues. Versus diluting the acidity in your bladder and having it so that you don't have to go to the washroom that often, which is always the reverse of what everybody wants to hear, but you want to drink a lot of water. And what the other thing I mentioned was caffeine intake. So coffee, everybody tends to love it in the morning. Most moms need it to wake up. Caffeine is good one cup a day. Anything more than that becomes, again, irritating to the bladder. And what I always say with my patients is I have some who are like, I need my 3 cups of coffee. And I go, okay, here's the balance. You can either have 3 cups of coffee or you can pee your pants, or you can decrease and not pee your pants. So it's up to you. What is the most benefit for you in your life? How much does that caffeine affect you versus how much do you really want to change your bladder habits so you don't have to go to the washroom as much? You don't have to have that irritation in your bladder as much. The third tip that I give to everyone is making sure that when you have to go, you actually go to the washroom. So like the teacher example that I gave where they're tending to hold on to having to go to the washroom for hours on end until there's a break. On a day-to-day life, on the one-off days, that's okay. I mean, you have to hold it to get to the washroom. But if you make it a habit of always having to tense those muscles and using your pelvic floor as the only method of trying to stop yourself from going pee, eventually those muscles are going to get burnt out. So you want to make sure that you're always listening to the cues that your body is giving you in order to actually go to the bathroom and release. Obviously, there are those of you who may, I'm not sure in this room, but there are those who have a problem with frequency, in which case I think the worst case that I've seen is probably 30 plus times that they're going to the washroom, in which case, obviously, that is a whole other issue to discuss. It's a little bit more complicated, but the frequency issue is, again, can be part of an overactive bladder or a very, very tight pelvic floor or a combination of both of them, in which case we often work together to figure out what the main issue is and also work on a lot of downgrading of what's triggering you to go to the washroom. But that's kind of a bigger topic to talk about. What I did want to share is some of the statistics as well when it comes to why this is important, because there was a lot of moms in the group. So why is this important to talk about, especially when you've had babies or you've been pregnant or you're planning on having children, and this is very important. Pregnancy is actually the greatest risk factor for future development of organ prolapse. Do we know what organ prolapse is? Has everybody heard of prolapse? For anyone who has, and I think most of you are naughty, for anybody who's never heard of organ prolapse, in when we're talking about the pelvic floor, happens to be the discussion or what when the bladder, the rectum, the urethra, or the uterus actually start to descend into that kind of bony cavity. So you want to think about this pelvic floor being really loose and things starting to kind of descend down. That could present as something protruding from the vaginal opening. That's a prolapse on the most extreme sense. There is a greater risk of prolapse when it comes to vaginal birth, use of forceps, or any damage to those muscles. So if you've given birth vaginally, they would have talked to you about a certain amount of tearing to those tissues. Some tearing does lead to tearing of the actual muscles, in which case that, again, makes you more likely that you could suffer from a prolapse. And over 30% of vaginal birth experience some form of injury to this muscle. So again, 3 out of 10 women are experiencing some sort of damage here. It's something that we want to discuss and something that we want to prevent for future. Low back pain and urinary incontinence has a very, very high correlation. Oftentimes, women who experience low back pain are also experiencing some sort of urinary incontinence, and it is even greater in the pregnancy population or postpartum. Diastasis recti. Has anybody heard about that? That's a fancy term. Good. Perfect. Perfect. For those who haven't, it's the abdominal separation. So if you think about a six-pack of abs, the separation happens between the two to the three sides, right? So 3 and 3, there's a gapping somewhere along there between the bottom of your rib cage and the top of your pelvis. That is a large percentage of women. 66% of women during third trimester experience that abdominal separation. That again has to do with core strength and core health. Now you are very lucky to be in a gym and in a facility that swim and that is actually looking out for you and being protective of you. You always want to make sure that you are doing the right thing for your body. I always say postpartum 1 week is still postpartum for life. You will still always have to be somewhat conscious of the changes that your body has gone through. And things have been stretched that don't necessarily always go back. That doesn't mean that you can't do a lot of things. It just means that you always have to be aware and be more protective of the things that you're doing. Those are the boring stats that I wanted to talk about and make sure that I highlighted them for sure for you. And I know one of the things that Leighton mentioned too is he wanted me to address some exercises at home to strengthen the pelvic floor. So one of the things that I would say that I talk to the majority of my clients or what we start off with is just relearning how to practice deep breathing, which sounds like the silliest thing, but it's something that we don't often do throughout the day. For whatever reason, women, especially in Western culture society, don't tend to be belly breathers. It's seen as something really not flattering for anybody. So we tend to breathe a lot from our upper chest rather than having our belly expand and come back in. So I work a lot on reteaching deep breathing, usually starting in a lying position, just practicing being able to expand your belly and expand your ribs. As if I stuck an umbrella down in your ribs and what you have to do is really expand those ribs open and then close up. That's the type of breathing you should be practicing on the daily in order to rework on that core. Because as I mentioned at the beginning, your core, the diaphragm is an integral part of your core system. So that is one thing that you can do to start working and connecting with your core is working on that diaphragm.
The second thing is working on re-engaging with your pelvic floor. So learning what is a Kegel to you. And that could be either one, seeing a pelvic floor physio and getting an idea in terms of what those muscles are doing. It also has to do with doing your own assessment and feeling vaginally what those muscles are doing. Because if things are good, what it should feel like is essentially like something is squeezing your fingers closed together and pulling up a little bit. That's what a good pelvic floor strength feels like. If you're more than keen to do that, I encourage you to do it, because that way you get an idea of what your body actually feels like. It should feel like a nice, good, strong squeeze together and pull in. After that, I start working a lot on transversus abdominis. Now, Leighton, do you work a lot on TVA there specifically or no?
Not really, no.
What's that?
You said, can you repeat that actually?
Do you work a lot specifically on training the TA or the TVA, transversus abdominis?
Yeah, a little bit.
Like there's so many different ways to contract this muscle. Often we start with something being super, super easy. So what I usually describe it, it's hard to grasp because again, just like the pelvic floor, you can't really see the movement. It's more about how it feels and how it feels to you and how you can start to feel whether that muscle is working or whether that's not. One of the cueings that I use is, again, often getting someone to lie on their back and then feeling, just poking inside their hip bone. So again, if this is you, your belly is facing towards the camera right now, facing you guys right now. I find those bony spots at the front. I bring my fingers in and I really push in as far as I am right here. And what I do is I pretend, or I tell my clients to say, these two points, I want you to think about squeezing them together. Okay? It should feel like a slight tensioning underneath your fingers, as if there was a balloon inside there and it was just blowing up. So it should feel like a tensioning. If you turn on your ab muscles, those big six-pack muscles, what'll happen is your fingers will just pop right out. And those are the muscles that you don't want to use. And again, it takes a lot of practicing. There's a lot of excellent videos out there for this now that are called TA breathing or TVA breathing. They show a lot of different examples of what it actually looks like to perform that and different cueing. Again, this is such a difficult one to teach and to get a grasp on, because you're not visually seeing anything. It's what you're feeling. And once you get that confidence of this is what's the right movement, it's much easier to develop it and get stronger in doing it. So if you have that, search up TVA breathing and you'll be able to start contract that. I love TVA for many, many things, because TVA is like the corset strings of the corset that is your whole abdomen. So if you have a nice strong abdomen, you have nice strong abdominal muscles, but you don't have the corset strings, you're not really going to have a strong core. Your TVA is really what brings everything nicely together. And often, especially postpartum women are most interested in this, because it gives you that little bit of a flatter belly look when it comes to the lower part of your stomach. So aesthetic reasons and functional reasons, it's a great muscle to start to exercise on. Those are the beginnings of what I start to teach women to do at home and how to exercise it, how to strengthen it, how to hold it for longer periods of time. Those are the basics. That's only the starting. From there, you start to do a lot of different movements, like on the more advanced end, things like dead bug while using those muscles. Things like using your arms and legs as a form of stress on your body. So moving your arms or legs in different positions so that you're providing some instability to your core while still being able to engage your TA or your pelvic floor or both. And that's how it gets more advanced. And I know one of the questions was also, will I ever jump again? And the answer is, depends. It depends on how far we take it. So on the hopeful side, on the ones that I deal with the most, yes, most women start to develop the ability to jump again. It's just on different timelines. And it's definitely not to say it never goes from doing your Kegels, lying on your back, doing it 10 times to all of a sudden you're jumping through hoops and you're fine. It really is a progression. It goes from doing Kegels, developing that strength, developing that inner awareness of being able to tighten those muscles and relax. Then it goes to harder things, like being able to do that during dead bugs, like I mentioned. Then it goes to being able to be standing upright and being able to bounce, just bending your knees and having no problems. Then bouncing up on your toes and having no problems. Then trying to bounce 2 foot once and getting really good at that. Then jumping twice and getting really good at that. So it's really a progression. And if any of you have ever gone through any type of strength training, which I'm pretty sure you have, you can see that it's never going from 0 to 100. You have to develop all the steps in between to actually go from where you're starting to where you want to be. You just have to break down the jumping movements and modify it, which from my perspective is really easy to say, but it really does come down to creativity and modifying and being able to start to develop the in-between steps to get there. Okay, that's a lot of information that I kind of spewed out for you guys. Do you have any questions at this point?
Short of going to see somebody professionally, how do you even know where to start or what your issue is or what to do, like from here, without seeing somebody to kind of tell you and let you know what your problem is?
Can you repeat that, Leighton, because you're closer to me?
So, Carmen, you just correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
She just asked Vanessa, how do you know where to start when you do see someone professionally?
Like, or if you're not going to see somebody professionally, how do you know where to start? If you're like,
okay,
listening to her tips,
yep,
and, you know, like where would you start?
Did you hear that last part, Vanessa?
That I got. Yeah, okay. So you're kind of wanting to know, I'm the person who is, I'm not seeing the pelvic floor physiotherapist. I know I really want to have a strong pelvic floor. I just don't know where to start. Are we talking about someone who has a problem or someone who doesn't have a problem?
Both.
Okay.
Both.
Yeah.
Both?
Yeah.
Or not sure.
Okay. So let's talk about let's define if you have a problem or not first. So things that could be a sign if you have a problem. If you're having leaking, whether it's occasionally sneezing, coughing, running, jumping, laughing, that's a sign of a problem. Another one is if you're having pelvic pain. So anything that really is painful around your pelvis, as high as your ribs, as low as the bottom of your knees, those are signs of potentially having a pelvic floor problem, especially if you haven't been able to figure out anything else. You've worked on your hips, you've worked on all sorts of things, and that pain still lingers. If you have a painful intercourse or pain with insertion of a tampon, that's a sign of a pelvic floor problem. If you have low back pain that is unrelenting with anything that you do, you've tried tons of different types of exercises, you've tried other therapies or treatments, and that's not resolving anything, that's probably a sign of a pelvic floor, at least the core issue there. So let's take the category of the women who fall into, they don't have any of those problems, they seem to be okay. Often what I say is then it's more of like a maintenance thing. So in that case, what I would say is I would start off by making sure that you know what a Kegel feels like. So you can put yourself on the toilet when you're going pee and you want to stop that stream and see what that feels like. This is only a test. It is not a form of exercise. I never want anyone to practice this multiple times, because then what you're doing is you're really messing with the reflex system of your brain, because your brain is going to start to think that every time we go pee, we also have to squeeze, which is the very opposite of what you want to happen. So you can do the pee test. See what that feels like and try to mimic that sensation when you're off the toilet. And there's two ways to cue yourself. One is to squeeze your muscles as if you're stopping yourself from stopping the flow of urine, or squeeze your muscles as if you're stopping yourself from passing gas. Two very different movements. And I bet you probably some of you are attempting to try this right now. Those are two very different things, both very important to work separately and simultaneously. So if we're talking about a healthy individual who doesn't feel like they have a problem, they would do the pee test, they would try to mimic that outside or off the toilet, and they would kind of practice that or check in with themselves maybe twice a week to sort of see if they can do that and how long they can hold it. There is by no means a specific regimen of exercises to do for them. They just want, for them, it would be more of a making sure they can do those contractions when they need to. So if you are a runner, making sure that you're actually performing a pelvic floor contraction during the hardest parts of your run, or when you're jumping, or when you're lifting particularly heavy weights, making sure that you're turning on those muscles the same way that you can at home, doing it there when you're performing the exercise. for the person who does have an issue, that is when it's sort of a figuring out, well, do you have a weak pelvic floor or do you have a very tight pelvic floor? And then that comes down to doing a self-internal assessment. That is when you actually do have to insert vaginally, can't even do it in this model, into here, right? Vaginally, to see what your muscles are doing. And it's safe to do on yourself. You can lie down. You always want to make sure that you're in a supportive position, because if you're trying to hold yourself up, your core is working, your pelvic floor is working to some capacity, those muscles will be tight. If you're relaxed, if you're lying down, you can kind of support yourself in kind of a reclined back position. You can actually insert two fingers and then squeeze and feel what that feels like. And it's not very, the muscles are pretty superficial. Like usually they're probably only about that deep in. And you want to feel those muscles, squeeze your fingers together and pull in and push up towards your belly. Those are the things that I would check first before I even start to do any type of exercise. Because as I mentioned, there's two very different regimens when it comes to a too tight or too weak pelvic floor. Once you figure out what's going on with your pelvic floor, if you're the too tight route, then you need to work a lot on that deep breathing that I talked about, a lot on what I call reverse Kegels, or visualizing as if these two sit bones are spreading further apart. A lot of times I will suggest clients use positions like, I'm trying to see, no one's really sitting in this position, like your feet together, knees out, like a butterfly position, some yoga positions with your, like happy baby is a great position, hip opening, pelvic opening position, butt against a wall, lying on your back, legs open. That's a really great position to start practicing deep breathing and opening and relaxing that pelvic floor. Those who suffer from a very weak pelvic floor would need to work more on tensioning those muscles. So working on squeezing as if they have to stop themselves from going pee, work on that contraction, see can they feel like a full contraction without using any other muscles, then relaxing it and then squeezing it again and then relaxing it and see how many they can do before they feel like they're not doing anything anymore. Then work on the back, stopping themselves from passing gas and relaxing it and then doing those together. So it's a very, it gets a little bit more complicated, but it really is getting into in touch with how you're feeling all these muscles. Are you feeling like between your sit bones as you're sitting there right now, do you feel the space in between there tensioning and pulling up into your body? That's the question. If you feel that, then you can become a little bit more confident in knowing that you can just work on the strength, the power, the endurance of that muscle. Does that kind of answer your question? Okay. Next question. Anybody else? You guys are a quiet bunch. That's okay. It's kind of a, it can be a touchy subject for many people because it's something that we don't openly discuss a lot of the time. But that's why I'm more than an open book. I've had people message me about tons of different problems that they have in terms of having that input of like, is this normal? And most of the time, just having that reassurance that you are not the only one is the greatest feeling in the world. And the only thing that I could say is most of the time, especially moms, tend to put off the feelings that they're having because they're too busy or whatever else they need to get through. And the more you delay it, the more I've seen women who are getting closer into their 50s and 60s and still struggling with a problem coming in saying, I wish I had known you existed earlier, or I wish I had addressed it earlier. Yeah.
How long should you spend a day doing like these exercises?
How long should you spend a day doing these exercises?
Yes.
Okay. So two different populations. The maintenance side, the ones who don't have a problem, I would say on average they might be doing it twice a week, doing 10 Kegels, nothing more, just some more tested that they're doing it. When we're talking about those with a dysfunction, let's talk about the tight pelvic floors, so the ones that need to relax. I find they tend to need to work a lot more on relaxing their pelvic floor muscles because they're doing so much during the day that they're getting tight and really tense multiple times in a day. So for them, I would say at least 3 times a day, they need to work on just deep breathing and trying to relax those muscles, each session being about five minutes or so to start. as it is just an interesting experience to have. For those who are working on tightening their muscles, then the repetitions depends on how many they can get through. So, for instance, I have women who start off with a very, very weak pelvic floor, in which case when we do a session together, they can maybe only do 3 to 5 pelvic floor contractions before they cannot do it anymore. And they need a lot of rest. So in that, then it comes down to sort of how does that person feel as they're doing their exercises. So if you're doing 5 and you're feeling great, you can go gung-ho to 10, then I would say probably work around 10. If you feel by 3, you're just like, you're doing that effortful of like, I don't know if I'm doing anything anymore, that's probably your max. When it comes to strength, it really goes to either doing 1 a day to 3 times a day, depending on how much you can do. So I'll give the example of, I have clients who they're into fitness, so they need their pelvic floor for the fitness side. I wouldn't exhaust their pelvic floor doing exercises 3 times a day, because then they'd be too fatigued. They'd be doing their fitness classes and they'd have leaks or anything else like that. So I know that through their fitness classes, they're also working through their pelvic floor, in which case I just give them 1 session of isolated pelvic floor exercises to know what that feels like, to practice just engaging those muscles. So it's a tough one to give you an exact number, an exact time. Pelvic floor exercises on their own usually only take 5 to 10 minutes to complete. And it's mostly because it depends on how well somebody is at, or how well somebody can be at feeling their own body and taking the breaks in between their squeezes. Also depends on the person. I'm giving you a lot of also it depends. So again, oftentimes when I work with someone, I get them to squeeze and hold, and I will feel when they start to peter out. And that's the first thing that we work on, is how long can they hold it. So some can hold again 10 seconds, no problem. And then we're getting them on holding it for 10 seconds and getting even further if we can. Then there's some who can hold about 2, and then it just peters off. They can't hold it anymore. So then it comes back down to doing your own internal exam, having a feel of what you're doing, having the sensation of, can you feel a contraction? Can you feel when you're letting go? And finding that sweet spot. So if I assess someone and they're able to hold it for 2, and about 3 it starts to peter off, then I work on at 2 seconds of holding it there for however many repetitions they can hold well. And then we start to work up on 3 seconds, and they get better at that. Then I do 4 seconds, they get better at that. So it just depends on where you're starting from and where you need to go. Okay. Any other questions?
Vanessa, did you say that we should be trying to contract while we're exercising, like while we're doing jumping jacks, as like also a form of working
Yeah. I would. Oh, I kind of froze a little bit. So you're wondering if we, if you need to work on tightening those pelvic floor muscles while you're doing jumping jacks or while you're doing anything that would put a little bit of task on your pelvic floor. I would say most crucially, it's important to do it for those who have or who have had any leaks, whether it's from something else like coughing, sneezing. It doesn't have to be that particular exercise that you've done, but I think it's very important to learn how to contract that pelvic floor and make sure that it's on par with the tougher exercises that you're doing. So if you have more of the symptoms of having some leakages somewhere in your history that comes on every now and then the more challenging part of your exercises, I would challenge you to start feeling whether you can contract your pelvic floor and set yourself up before you do that exercise. So in your jumping jack exercise, that tends to be particularly irritating for most women, because not only is it jumping, it's also the outward movement of your legs. So you're putting yourself in a very vulnerable position. So for those, what I usually say is it doesn't have to be this full force pelvic floor contraction, like with all your might you need to squeeze the pelvic floor as hard as you can. You want to measure or you balance the amount of contraction that you squeeze the pelvic floor to the effort that you're doing. So if you find jumping jacks no problem, then it might be just a light tensioning to make sure that you're able to support. If you struggle, then it might be more of like a 30%, 50%. If you're moving to deadlifting 100 pounds, then you want to match that that pressure, that effort with how much you're preparing your pelvic floor to support that weight. Yeah. Any other questions?
You mentioned abdominal separation. Can you talk a little bit more about that and about exercises that you should or shouldn't do if you have that?
Yeah. So abdominal separation. Abdominal separation, as we talked about, it's when the two sides of the abs, so if I'm facing you and you got like a three pack and a three pack, it's a split down the middle somewhere along that line. That abdominal separation is a combination of, or just one, either it's really wide or it's really deep. So when exercises are wrong to do is when you can't really support that gapping. So for instance, we'll take two examples of one client who doesn't have a very strong or an ability to control that gap, and one client who's really good at controlling the gap. Same width of gap, same depth of gap, just ability to control it. So the one who doesn't have good control of it can't go into a plank, because as soon as she goes into a plank, things drop through and she can feel things protrude through that gap. The other good control client can do a plank because she can actually engage her TVA muscle and engage her ab muscles and can actually close that gap and support it. She can go to a plank no problem and actually have no protrusion through that gap. There are certain exercises that we tend to avoid, but they tend to be mostly in the pregnancy population because they are naturally growing and expanding. So you don't want to emphasize any more stretch or pressure on that area. So in pregnancy, we're saying do not put any pressure. So you can't really look, trying to think how to say this. You can't really face down because you're putting pressure a lot onto your abdomen. Oh, can you guys hear me?
Yep.
I'm reconnecting because there is a poor network connection. Hello?
Yeah, we're good, Vanessa.
I can't see you or hear you. I don't know if, let's see if I can. Oh, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
I'm just talking to myself then. It was like reconnecting. I couldn't see you guys anymore. Anyway. Right, so there's certain exercises that you want to avoid that put too much pressure on that abdominal container. So just like we talked about that core canister, like a pop can before, we have to avoid exercises that put too much crunch on that can. So oftentimes the things we try to avoid are things like sit-ups, crunches, leg raises, leg ups, really intense abdominal exercises. I never like to say that I exclude all of them for my clients, because like I mentioned with like the one client who has really excellent control and one client who doesn't have good control, the one with the great control, I will give a lot of exercise to. The one with the not so good control, then we have to modify things and change it up so that she starts to progress to having better control of movements as she gets closer to doing like a full sit up or a full crunch. So it's just about with abdominal separation, you want to avoid exercises that cause a doming or a feeling like there's things protruding through, and anything that really makes you hold your breath and squeeze that can. Yeah, does that help answer the question? Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else? Has anybody ever seen a pelvic floor physio? You have, too. Yay, okay, good. Perfect. It's a lot of what I've told you similar to what you heard before. Similar, yeah. Yeah, I was about to say, we all tend to kind of preach the same thing, which is good because it should be pretty consistent. Anything else? Good. Well, I did want to say that I hope that I answered all your questions. I know sometimes it can be an uncomfortable platform to talk openly about any issues that you are having in particular. I am an open book, like I mentioned as well. I'm more than happy to answer any questions that you might have, any issues that you're having that you didn't want to speak in more of a public forum. Feel free to message me. I think Leighton gave you guys my Instagram handle. That's kind of the easiest way to find me. I can also message you guys right after this just to give you my email address. If you wanted to email me with any specific concerns or issues that you have, please feel free. I did want to thank you guys for coming here, because it's really, really important that we're teaching as many women about this as possible. It is my mission to make sure that no woman feels that peeing in their pants is normal. And the hard part is, likely the people that come to these types of sessions either have a problem or know someone who has a problem versus working on prevention. So I would love if you share your story or what you know with more women that you connect with, that we make this more of an open subject to talk about rather than always putting a shame behind it or treating it like it's something normal, that it's like a rite of passage that all women have to go through due to having children or just due to the nature of how our pelvises are. It's not. It's something that's actually something that we can fix. We just need to actually discuss it. All right. Yeah. Cool. Otherwise, I'm happy to chat with you guys at another time. Leighton, thank you for putting me on the TV and figuring this out.
Thanks for being so patient, Vanessa. What's your name on your Instagram? I already know what it is, but for everyone that's listening.
Yeah, it's at Core Strength Mama. I'll just put it. I don't know if you can see the chat here. I just messaged it to you. Could you see it?
Yeah.
Oh, see? And I'll put my email there. Power of technology. Whoop.
Got it.
I think it went up. That is both good ways to get a hold of me. I check it. I'm more than happy to answer questions or at least guide you in the right direction, because as I mentioned, I really, really just want to help. I don't think I can say that enough.
Thank you so much, Vanessa. We appreciate you.
No problem. No problem. Have a safe drive, everyone, tonight. I don't know how your weather is there right now.